Welcome to the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast.
Everyone, it's the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast. My name is Peter Bond. In this podcast, I'm going to explain to you everything you need to know about the upcoming French GP in Le Mans. And the Le Mans racetrack is quite a special one. So let's start with some general information. I keep it short. It's a stop and go track. So lots of hard braking and acceleration, of which much of them are with the bike upright. That's a bit special. Coupled with some faster corners where the rear tire has provided acceleration drive for quite a long time. Now, the nature of the track is such that track limits are not really a big problem here. That's good to hear, because we all hate it when riders receive penalties and race results are changed after the finish. So that's the good news. The bad news is, it's a track that makes riders crash a lot. Last year, saw 9 riders crashing out of the race, and that was a dry race. So if a rider is desperate to score a point, then just staying on the bike should do it here in Le Mans. If you plan to go there, 2 things. Be prepared for cold and wet conditions, but also be prepared to have company. Le Mans has high spectator numbers and they like the party. Let's go to the bikes. What do we need from the bike in Le Mans? What do the MotoGP bikes need to be excel at, and what is less important on this Le Mans racetrack? It shoots bikes that can accelerate hard when the bike is completely upright. And that acceleration comes from horsepower, aero and the rear ride height device. But also the bike must be able to pinpoint accurately into the slow speed chicanes. And that capacity from the bike comes mostly from front tire confidence that a rider has, engine braking, and or the ability to use the rear brake very well as a rider. And that's important here, because being slightly offline into a slow speed chicane or corner means your exit is compromised. Well, that is really crap, because with some of the long straights that follow these short slow speed corners here, you secretly lose a lot more time than you would think you did, considering you missed the entry by maybe even ever so slightly. So the front tire should have a carcass that supports all this heavy upright braking. Plus, it should not lock too easy, because at the moment, riders are modulating the front brake pressure in and around the locking of the front wheel. A bit like a human ABS, actually. So a tire that locks a bit later will be needed here. It's Michelin's home GP, and they are the title sponsor. So let's hope they bring tires that help to have fewer crashes and close racing. Over to the rear tire. This could be chosen quite soft here in Le Mans, because we do most of the acceleration with the bike fairly upright. And not spending a lot of time accelerating on the side of the tire means a lot less stress into that same tire. After all, when the bike is banking, there is much more load on the tire, and therefore the tire can transmit much more power, which in turn leads to more tire wear. But like I said earlier, we don't do a lot of the acceleration with the bike banked here. Now, we all want to know where to overtake on this track. And that's, again, good news, because lots of places actually. No rider will have to come back to his team and tell them he was much faster than the guy he was following, but he couldn't get past him. Really, that's bullshit. In Le Mans, you always find a way through. Having said that, that's not going to be turn one. Here, you don't overtake there, because turn one, and later I'll take you on a lap doing the track together, turn one is super fast, but a lot of the action will happen into turn two, which from a viewer's point of view is actually sort of turn one, because it's the first time we see the riders really dive into the brakes. Turn two is also a very popular corner to crash, and that's down to the fact that the riders arrive there with the front tire that is stone cold on the left-hand side. So the overtakes here, they are tempting, since the rider ahead has to open the door for him to have a good entry. So the turn two is a left-hand corner. To enter it, you have to go completely to the right. Left side of your tire is cold, so you're a little bit careful, a little bit maybe slower than other people would think you need to be. And these other people, usually the people following you, are therefore tempted into having a go, dive on the inside, and then find out why you were careful, because it was a stone cold left-hand side of the tire. Turn two is the crash corner. Next option to overtake is turn four. And that's also a tricky one, because it's off-camber. Go downhill, it's a bit of off-camber fast right-hander, so it's a brave thing to do there, because many riders have crashed out there. Off-camber means little room for error. If you misjudge things on an off camber corner, you don't get away with it by just turning in 1 meter later. As soon as you realize you made a mistake on a corner that is banked wrongly for your natural feeling, you're missing the apex if you get there anyway by miles. Over to turn five then, which apart from it being a left-hander, comes down to the same situation as turn four. The door is open, but a slightly optimistic move will end up in the gravel trap. So easy there. Next stop for the overtaking is turn six. It's a favorite hotspot, and this chance that's offered there usually comes if the rider that is ahead of you don't have enough tire left to accelerate very well out of the fast and opening turn number five. If you don't have the rear tire to make a good acceleration out of turn five, the guy that's following you will be under you into turn six. Next up, turn seven. It's the entry of a left-right chicane, where opportunities arrive if your bike was a better drag racer from turn four to five than the bike in front of you. Next overtake, hotspot, turn 11. So, you know, you can hear me saying there's a lot of opportunities here to overtake. Turn 11 is the next one. It's the right hand, the four last corner. It often creates drama if it comes down to the last lap, because it is basically the last corner. It's technically the four last corner, because after that comes another one. It's a double right hander, which is more or less like a hairpin. So into it, it is your last opportunity. And yeah, if you're following a guy for the last couple of laps and you're really, really, really desperate, it's there where you're going to make the move. But it's also there where it often ends up in tears. Now, let's go. Join me as we go for a lap around this classic racetrack. And it starts already a little bit special. If we enter the start-finish straight and we go through the gearbox, it's really early on the straight. In fact, it's only a straight for a short time. In the beginning, it's a straight. When we hit the finish line, we're going through the gearbox, it's 3, 4, 5. By the time you think, okay, that's an okay speed, and you look ahead, it's not even a straight anymore. It's a very fast right hand. A corner is a big word. It's also not a kink, because it continuously goes to the right. What riders do here is they hit six gear and then roll off ever so slightly a little bit with a throttle. What you do here is fifth gear, go to the left hand curb, put the thing on your knee and pray that everything is all right, because you really, really, really don't want to crash here when you just hit turn six. The sixth gear into turn number one. Why we need sixth gear? We need sixth gear because suddenly you put the thing on its side, and that means you're on the smaller part of your tires, which sort of effectively changes your gearing a lot. So speed wise, you could have it here in fifth gear, but you do sixth gear because suddenly you start to make a lot of lean angle. So it's a lot of speed, it's a lot of banking, a lot of lean angle. And while banked over in sixth gear, with slowly rolling the throttle a little bit off, you start to brake while still on the right hand side. You don't have it any longer on your knee. You brake a little bit, you shift down two gears, and that's technically turn number one. From turn number one to two, you don't accelerate, you just open the brake, maybe open a little bit the gas, and then you need to come back to completely the right side of the track. So we have a very fast right-hand kink, which we do with just a little bit close throttle. We need to go completely to the right side of the track, braking, braking, braking. At the last moment, it's here technically turn number two that we speak about. It's a chicane. It's an important one, because if at this moment if somebody is behind you, he can put it under you and just do a block pass. So if you go for the lap time, go completely to the right side. If you hear all the time an engine screaming behind you, even in the braking zone here, keep it closed. Have an entry on the inside of turn number two, which will be bad for your lap time, but at least it doesn't open the door for somebody to put it underneath you. Turn number two to number three is just a fast chicane. Now it gets interesting, because from number three to number four, it goes uphill under the Dunlop Bridge. And this Dunlop Bridge is there where there is a left-hand kink. We accelerate hard over the crest, which is technically for me, okay, it's a left-hand kink under the Dunlop Bridge. And it's interesting. You have to follow the bikes there on television because it's a lot of work. Basically, MotoGP guys, they muscle the bike from turn three to turn number four. This fast left-hand kink, which you do with a lot of acceleration, is quite a handful with the bike. So you go from turn three to number four, and in the middle you have the curbs on the left-hand side because you dive into turn number four, downhill, hit the brakes, but you don't want to already enter these brakes on the inside. So in order to enter turn number four a little bit on the left side, you got to be all over the curbs going there. Now turn number four is fast, and it's also a very long corner. So you go in, there's a lot of mid-corner speed. If your bike doesn't have mid-corner speed, there is no way to deal with it. Because you cannot say, I change my line, I make it a V instead of a corner, because it is just a long corner. Be careful with the front tire, like I said, turn number four. Right-hand side of your tire has to be hot enough. You have a lot of load on your right side of your front tire. Accelerating out of turn four, we let the bike drift completely to the left and even keep the banking, which we have a right-hand banking, all the way back until you are completely back to the right side of the tire, hard braking into turn number four, which again is an off-camber thing. Turn number five is off-camber, hard braking, and it's a funny corner, but it's a difficult corner to do correctly. When you enter it, it feels like, okay, that's a really slow corner. But once you're in there, you suddenly realize you can immediately open the gas because it's a corner that opens up. So you spend a long time on the left side of the tire accelerating really, really fast out of it. It's exactly one of these places where if you put a soft tire in and you need to do the lap time, here under acceleration, you make the lap time. You use all you have in the rear tire, especially on the left side, to have a beautiful drive out of turn number five. So you spend a long time on the left side of the tire, out of turn number five, which opens. Then it's a short straight into turn number six. And on this map, it says turn number six, but basically these are two 90-degree right-handers followed by each other, and they are very interesting. Exactly the place where also the long lap penalty is outside. It's two right-handers very shortly after one another, and the riders take them as one. Right-handed. And this is a critical one. Some bikes are geared to do it the first gear. Some riders do it in some bikes. Usually the most bikes at the moment are geared in a way to do it in second gear. So you brake very, very hard. It's a really slow speed corner. But once you tip it in, you need to let it go completely outside. Use quite a lot of curb. And now comes maybe the most important thing from the whole lap in Le Mans, exiting turn number six. Because this is the drag strip. You're entering literally a drag strip that comes back every lap again. From six to seven is just dead straight, and you need a drag racer. So coming out of turn number six, you really, all you need to think about when you go in there is not how to get in there maybe 0.1 faster, but how the fuck to get out there perfectly on the right moment, on the right timing, dropping the rear right highs, opening the throttle, be all over the triple clap with your body, using all the curbs you can get, and that's every lap and lap and lap again. Because that's a drag strip, and it punishes you so hard. If you don't have the exit from six right, you lose quite a lot of lap time, because all the way to seven, you are too slow. So, okay, riders know that. That's the drag strip. Turn number seven, quite a high speed, hard braking, basically simple corner. What makes it a little bit tricky is it's a chicane, so you go left, right, seven and eight. If you overdo it a little bit on the brakes for turn seven, you end up a little bit, and a little bit can be just like half a meter too wide in the middle of these two corners, and then your exit from eight will be compromised, will be shit. So yes, you brake a long time for turn seven because you come from a high speed, and if you have a long braking area and you start a little bit too early, you lose a lot. At the same time, if you're a little bit too late and you end up 1 meter too wide in the middle of turn seven, your exit from eight and your whole corner to eight will be compromised, will be crap. And all the way to nine, you will be too slow. Now, 9 and 10 are basically the only more or less normal corners. 9 is just a fast right-hander, a little bit over 90 degrees, leads into turn number 10. So all you need here is a bike that keeps corner speed and you can flick it between 9 and 10 very accurately, very fast, exactly on the right moment from your right knee quickly to your left knee. Now, turn number 10 is a little bit like turn number 5. You start accelerating early. You use a lot of rear tire to have a beautiful drive out of turn number 10 because turn number 10 is already looking at the map more than 90 degrees, but the reality, it's a lot more than what it looks on the map, because you have to come back completely to the left to have a beautiful entry into turn number 11. Well, beautiful entry if the same guy that was following you into turn number 2 is still not there, because if he's there, you have to make a crap entry into turn number 11, keep the doors closed, be on the inside. That's the thing with Le Mans. If somebody is following you and you keep the door closed, you will lose a lot of lap time. The two of you will be very slow. When you're alone, you can do like miracles. You can use all the track, all the curbs everywhere you go, but in Le Mans the door is open quite a few times if somebody is following you. That's why, and that I love it, I love the races in Le Mans, because you can overtake everywhere, but it's a bit of a problem if you're the guy that they want to overtake over there. Turn number 11 is a right hand, 90 degree right hand, immediately followed by turn number 12. I really, really want to ask you to really watch careful on television what you see happening in turn number 11 and 12, and especially watch Marc Marquez. Okay, he was always on the Honda. When you watch him through turn 11 over the last couple of years on the Honda, he did sort of a miracle over there. And I'm so curious if he will do the same on the Ducati, because what he did on the Honda in turn 11 to 12 is letting it drift out between turn 11. He was using so much curb with so much lean angle that you couldn't believe he got away with it. He had whatever 50 degree lean angle, nearly the elbow on the ground, and being very wide on the curbs. I mean, everybody takes a little bit of curb between 10 between 11 and 12. But the way Marc Marquez was using on the Honda, the curbs, that was from another level. And that was maybe something he got away with the Honda, or it's a gift that he has. We will have to wait and see how he does it on the Ducati, because exiting turn number 12, it's the same old story. It's not the same old story, because you enter the start-finish race, which, like I started this explanation, is actually straight for only quite a short time, because you go through the gearbox 2, 3, 4, 5. By 5, you start to lean it in, put it in 6 to make sure you don't hit the rev limiter too early, and then you start the next lap again. And that's basically my explanation of what I think you need to be careful of when you're doing the lap in Le Mans on a MotoGP bike. And that brings me to the next thing. And it's not my favorite thing, actually. Race prediction. I know you guys like it. I hate it. Because when you start to predict things, it will for sure turn up differently. I have to do it anyway. So believe me, Ducatis are always fast here. So especially with, since part of it, like I said, is a drag race. So yeah, we don't even need to speak about why Ducati is favorite here. Ducati, in a sense, is a drag racer that turns pretty well for a drag racer. KTM should be fine here well, because that bike is nimble. And you need a nimble bike on the very slow speed corners to be always exactly on the line where you need to be. So KTM will be fine here. It's accurate enough around the slow corners, and it has the power to go with the best bikes on the straight line. Aprilia was actually going to win it, in my opinion, last year, until Maverick was so impatient and tried to overtake. I was actually overtaking Pecco Bagnaia between turn 9 and 10. That was a bit of an over optimistic move. I mean, the race was long enough. If he should have waited 2 more laps or 2 more corners to overtake Pecco, he would probably have won it. So a little bit against what we think we know about Aprilia, you have to count Aprilia as a favorite, even though we all think it's a bike that benefits from ground effect, which you barely use at all at Le Mans. It was a beautiful bike last year, and there is not a lot of reason to think it will not be a competitive bike this year. So that's it about the Le Mans racetrack. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Oxlipo MotoGP podcast. We love to hear your comments on this. Be on our social media on our website, oxlipom.com. And if you like what we're doing, please consider supporting us. For the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you help us keep making this content. Thanks for listening. Bye.